In today's digital age, our data is constantly under threat. Most organizations are still stuck using outdated, fragmented tools, making data management a cumbersome and slow process. But there's a game changer on the horizon: Cohesity Data Cloud. With Cohesity, you're not just reacting to threats, you're actively building resilience. This AI-powered platform helps you protect and secure your data, while also unlocking key insights. You can detect threats earlier through AI and automation and recover data in hours, not days. It's about turning challenges into opportunities and ensuring resilience across AI, cloud, and identity. Ready to safeguard your data with cutting-edge technology? Visit Cohesity.com Data Cloud. Cohesity, resilience everywhere. Artificial intelligence, data centers, robotics, drug addiction, alcoholism, dyslexia, violence, fighting, juvenile detention. This next guest, he's got them all. Stay tuned, it's going to get wild. My name is Ross Mandel. I'm coming to you guys live today from Delray Beach, Florida. This is Going Public. We're at Scott Woolley Studios. What a guy we have here today. You know, at first glance, he's got this like hillbilly-ish, Duck Dynasty-ish, cat. But, what hillbilly went to MIT and was in the data center business 25 years ago? It's a buzzword today. This guy, he put the intelligence in artificial intelligence. Ken Cox.
How you doing, Ross?
So good to see you, bro.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate your time and
This is
energy.
like such a privilege, boy. You are a genuine dichotomy. I did a little research on you, and I've met you.
Yeah.
We've chatted, but very, sort of superficially in passing.
Yeah, we meet at parties and stuff, and it's a good time.
Right. But you have amazing depth, bro.
Thank you.
And you're a young man, I mean, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
50.
Relativity.
I remember my 50th birthday party. I was like, and I thought I was old then.
Yeah.
I'm facing 70 next year, God willing.
We live in a beautiful planet that I think, we're going to have to live longer because
of the
tech.
That's what they say, you especially.
Yeah.
They say if you could hold on for another 3 to 5 years, you'll live to an extra 20, 25 years.
Well, I don't think they're taking either one of us in three.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to be like 100 years old. I'm sorry, unless all my parts work.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm ready to go to the next place.
Well, with peptides, I think all your parts can work.
I'm on peptides plus, just so you know. But listen, what I love to do is I love to dial the clock back. I want to get to know you. I want my audience to get to know you, because if you're sitting in this seat, if you're on Going Public, you are really, you have been selected and you're special. We have literally 500 people on the waiting list, if you can imagine. And I know you flew in just to be on the show today.
Yes.
And I'm so grateful. So let me ask you, Ken, what was early life like? Where were you born?
Okay.
How old are you? Tell everybody your story a little bit.
Yeah. I'm Ken Cox. I was born Kenny Schneider, St. Louis, Missouri.
Kenny Schneider.
Yeah. I was born Kenny Schneider. Grew up, born homeless. My mom scrambled up cash, my cousins, to get a small apartment above a bar where she was working at to bring me home to. So I grew up in a bar. First 8 months of my life was pretty rough, right? I had a hernia. We didn't have the money to get a surgery. So I was in pain, living in a bar, loud music. That was my
Environment.
Introduction into this planet.
Wow.
She met my stepfather sometime in there at that bar, right? They got married, and at the age of 7, they said, "Hey, do you want to become Kenny Cox?" Obviously, I didn't know what the name meant then. I'm like, "Sure." Very shortly after, I got in some trouble, and I was a little violent kid. So while this adoption process is going on, the state steps in, and they're now evaluating the entire family unit and all that stuff. I had lots of problems. Very violent kid.
Got into a lot of fights.
Got into a lot of fights.
Like in school and all that kind of thing?
In school, anything that was in front of me.
Really?
Yeah.
You were angry at
I was
something.
Angry. I was in pain. Life wasn't good. I did not understand school. I didn't understand any of this stuff, right? I grew up in a in a family that skirted the rules to get what they needed, right? So even though we didn't have a lot of money, my mother always found a way for me to have technology.
Technology, really?
Tech, yeah. So at the age of 7, I started typing. And that is the single thing that I did. It's the age of 7. The therapist said, Ken, you need to write every day. And I'm like, I can't write. I can't use my hands to write.
Why?
I don't know which one's right or left, and it takes too long to get the thoughts out. And I get angry and I'm frustrated.
Were you diagnosed with autism or something to that effect?
At that point, I was only diagnosed with I was diagnosed with dyslexia, but they just called me. They put me in what they called the retarded rooms.
Okay,
right. So I couldn't do the stuff that the other kids were doing, other than recess and music class and gym class. I could do that stuff, but reading, science, arithmetic, all that stuff, I went to a different room.
You were frustrated. They didn't know about dyslexia so much then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I had a keyboard at home, and the doctor said, write every day. So I started typing every day. Every day from the age of 7, I started typing.
So you're good with that now.
I'm a keyboard genius, right?
So a ninja.
And nobody knew anything about computers in 1982. Right.
1982, there weren't computers.
Yeah. So I had like Brother word processors. I had an Atari computer. I had a Amiga 1000, right? All this crazy shit. And then my mom leaves the bar industry and gets a job at Wash U. Now I'm starting to get my hands on Macs.
This is St. Louis, correct?
St. Louis, Missouri.
Great school.
Yeah. So I got to spend 1 year at Wash U. So I get my hands on Macintoshes and Windows 3.1. I'm starting to get my hands on these different computer systems. So
it's the beginning of the computer age.
Yeah, at the very, like right at the
right
the crux. So I've been on that part of the wave ever since.
From day one.
From day one, right?
From day one.
I went to Wash U for a year, and I worked at their medical library. That's what helped me pay for tuition, right?
Okay.
So, and my mom worked there, and I worked there, so.
You know, your mom, I got to say, she had a rough start, but she made sure you got.
She hustles, man. Yeah. She hustles. She's still alive today. She's 71.
Hopefully you look after her now.
Yeah, she lives in one of my homes, and.
You've made some money in your life, so I want to get to this.
Well, I've lost more than.
Listen, I haven't met a successful guy that hasn't made it and lost it.
Yeah, so cruise through that. At the, I leave Wash U to go, and I toured the road for a year with some music industry stuff, right? I got into a bad car accident. At the time, I was going into journalism. I was camera guy. I really wanted to make movies and be camera guy, right? That's what I really wanted to do. But when I was 19, I got hit by an 18-wheeler. Fractured my skull, dislocated my shoulders, broke my neck, my back, all that stuff. 18 months in rehab. And I couldn't carry a camera anymore, right? Back then, the cameras were 85 pounds. I had a 150-pound battery belt on to be out on the court, right? So that was my dream, and it changed instantly. Took a small break, went into the music industry because I could stage manage, right? I knew that stuff, and did a tour. That tour was going to go to Japan. Said, I don't want to go to Japan. There's no chicken nuggets in Japan in 1999. Right? Like, so I'm like, I don't know if I can make it in Japan for a year.
Chicken nuggets guy.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Yeah. It's the autism.
I get it.
I got to have basic.
It's scary that I
had to have basic fundamental foods, right? And at the time, Japan just was not jiving with me. So I'm like, well, I'm going to take this tour off and look for me another American tour. And I took a job at a company called primary.net in 1999.
Wow.
And I remember I called my dad was still alive, and I called my mom, and I was like, hey, I'm going to take this job. And it pays $7.25 an hour. But I get this wild-ass commission on these things called emails, right? Every email that I sell, I get 25 cents a month, and I think I can sell a lot of them. And I did. So I went to work at primary.net. Within 5 days, I had moved on to the web hosting department at Primary. At the time, Primary was the fifth fastest growing company in the country. We beat Southwestern Bell to market with DSL.
Wow.
2001 sold to Empower Communications. And then I went to work for there. 2000 that went to, sold to Empower. 2001, Empower is leaving the filing bankruptcy, leaving, you know, right. The stock goes from $80 a share to 25 cents a share in the bubble. Me and my partner, Steve, who's passed away, and Brian, who's still here, he's my financial guy, said, hey, let's start a web hosting company. Empower's leaving. I had clients like, you know, wonderbread.com and all these great clients that I had. I had about 4,000 websites that I was managing at the time.
Wow.
And as Empower was going, we were able to come in and make a hell of a deal for just the business class and the hosting customers. And we got the name primary.net back. And that was the birth of hosterian.com. And that was the first data center that we built.
So you're hosting thousands of...
thousands of sites.
Right.
At that time...
You had the servers and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and we had the data center, right? So the data center that we still operate today. Really? Hosterian bought that building in 2012.
Nice.
So now we own and operate the data center. So we don't have to answer to anybody about what kind of data we serve, how we do that. And our customer, our clientele appreciate that.
It all depends who you have, but of course.
Right. So, and we are, you know, we don't monitor any data. In my industry, there's two different kinds of ways that you can host data. You can host data and monitor it.
Okay.
If I monitor your data... for stuff like knowing who you are so I can serve you better ads and all those other things. Now, I have a liability if you're doing something illegal.
To report you, or
if I believe you're doing something illegal. I don't know. And I'm not a judge. I'm not a jury. I'm none of those things, right? So,
Right. You're not an attorney.
No, we've always taken the stance that we don't monitor data to the point that if it's inside our system, we encrypt it. We can't see it.
I love it.
Right? So... And that follows through with everybody else that may ever want to see your data, local authorities, federal authorities, whoever, right?
And so, that all goes on behind the scenes. A lot of people don't understand that.
Yeah. So if a local or federal law enforcement comes to me and says, hey, I need to see this person's data.
Right.
My answer is, sure, let's go through all the proper paperwork. And you need to have the proper court orders, the proper subpoenas and everything else. Where
now you're talking to a guy that went through that. You know that, right?
And these publicly traded companies, their rules are a little different. Cooperate in a different... I'm wildly cooperative with our government. I will follow all of the rules that they put in place for us to hand over any data that I need to. However,
subject to a subpoena, a proper subpoena.
However, I'm not going to give them your data because they knocked on my door and said, hey, let me see Ross's data.
Right.
Which is what it appears a lot of these bigger firms do.
Wow. I get it.
Yeah.
I actually get it. I've been through that. You know, it's crazy. Yeah,
I know. That's why I think this is a great conversation to have.
It's a crazy story. People have no idea.
And now with AI, it's even crazier.
It's crazier.
Like you're giving these mega companies... And I know you're a stock guy, and this is going right. And I've stayed privately held for very, very specific reasons, right? Because that's my clientele. That's who I serve. And if I'm publicly traded, then I can't...
Whole different game.
I can't do the things that I do, right? I have to listen. I have to do Sarbanes-Oxley stuff. So being privately held has been my differentiator
It allows you to represent a certain type of clientele. For sure. You're more specialty, I mean, in an odd way, right? People will seek you out if they're in a certain, right? That's what I'm gaining, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. So, and today with AI, you know, some of the case scenarios are if you're these biohackers or you're in the peptide industry or you're working on proteins and you're, or even in the stock market,
correct.
Right? You're sharing information with an AI. I don't want Sam Altman to have that information to sell me ads back on it. I want a private AI that I can talk to, that I know that if it's in the cloud or on my local machine, that my thoughts are my thoughts, not anybody else's.
Once it goes to, let's say, ChatGPT, whatever, it's on his server.
Well, it's on his server, and I believe your terms and conditions say that he could use it to train his model.
Correct. I get it. Wow. You know, who thinks of all these things? But I guess this is why you're on the show today. This is great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is just great discussion because the average people don't have any idea what's going on and it doesn't affect them. You know, people are very funny. Until it affects you, you're oblivious.
Well, it's affecting them. They don't even know it.
Well, that's what I mean. But I'll never forget, I'm married and all of a sudden my wife's pregnant and I have a baby. And all of a sudden I wake up one day and I look around the world and everything I see has to do with having babies and the stores and the shops and the diapers and the formula, all these things you never pay attention to. I just drive by, I walk by, they're not in my, you know, in my consciousness. But all right. of a sudden, once I'm experiencing them, I realize, holy shit, the whole world is fucking going through this. You know, I didn't know. And, you know, when I first got notice from a private bank at Bank of America that they were going to close 20 of my accounts after spending 10 years wooing me and spending tens of thousands of dollars to get me as a client, flying me in private jets to Wimbledon and going to the Super Bowl, it's at the 50-yard line, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I was a big private bank client. All of a sudden, I get my wife calls me up and says, Ross, we got this crazy thing from Bank of America, 22 letters. We have to move our accounts in 30 days or they're going to just cash us out. You know, it's $50 million. Dollars.
It's hard to move.
The whole thing was like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Call the lawyers. Lawyers say, can't get an answer. The bank won't comment. You know, it turns out the government's subpoenaing all my shit all over the fucking place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My data, everything from everywhere. You know, it's...
And it's getting harder every day to move.
Oh, yeah, well, that's a whole other story. It's going to be even crazier right now. Now Trump just announced they want banks up to proof of citizenship. Luckily, I'm a citizen, but I'm just saying, you know, a lot of people are really screwed.
Yeah, and I mean, today, like, I know that the debit card limits, they're dropping them because of the fraud.
All kinds of craziness.
Like, I can't spend more than $500 in a day in a lot of times and without calling my bank and having a conversation. It's crazy.
Wow, I get it. It's. I understand. That's why now you have the digital currency and this Clarity Act, the Genius Act. I mean, you know, they're talking about, I recommended a stock a few weeks ago, you know, Coinbase and Circle. Yeah. And Stripe is coming to the market. It'll be an IPO in the next 3 or 4 months. And these are, it's fintech. You know, it's financial technology companies.
McKelvey hits it out of the park every single time, man. I would bet big on Stripe. I would bet big on McKelvey. Right. Forget about Stripe.
But Stripe, listen, if you're a mastermind client of Ross Mandel, you know Stripe. It's great payment. I mean, it's really it's like almost easy peasy and it's reliable, et cetera.
Yeah, what they did to the marketplace is beautiful.
It's just, you know, it's beautiful stuff, right? That's one of the IPOs that I'm very excited about, personally.
Yeah. And with solopreneurship, that's going to it's going to go up tremendously.
No question.
Yeah.
No question. And the table's being set right now. I've been talking about this for a year, just, you know, market conditions just happen to be amazing at this particular time of the year. NVIDIA's going to announce blowout earnings. Blowout top line, blowout bottom line, returning money to in the form of dividend payments. They're going to be share buybacks. I mean, what? He's going to be doing $1 billion a day going forward. Imagine a business where you do $1 billion in sales a day.
A day.
A day.
And they're pre-sales.
It's already sold. Right?
this is not even on the manufacturing line yet.
Everything that he can produce the next 5 years is already sold.
He's selling futures of his own products.
It's so crazy. People are like questioning NVIDIA. I'm like, what are you, a moron?
Yeah.
I mean, this is...
Should we bet a little on AMD?
I'm high on AMD.
Okay.
Micron, AMD. Listen, you're going to have all these data centers, right? You're a data center guy.
Yeah.
AI, right? You're producing so much data. Used to be... the computing world was based on retrieval, right? You would go to a computer and the computer would access data that was already out there and sort of, you know, accumulate it for you and deliver it to you. So it's retrieval based.
Yeah.
Today, our computers are like agentic. They act as agents. They're figuring shit out. It's not necessarily retrieving anymore. So they need more data.
Yeah.
Well, you got all this data. It only makes sense. You need more memory.
Yeah.
So Micron is my company. You know, Micron is cheap as fuck and it's already up. I recommend 180. It's 700 today.
Oh, wow.
I'm killing it, bro. And, you know, we play derivatives and all that. And AMD, my good friend bought 1,000 shares at 18, like 2.5 years ago. And he hasn't done well in business, but he still has AMD.
Yeah.
It's like $500,000. That's but okay. I'm just saying, from 18 grand.
It's okay.
It's beautiful. 1,000 shares. It's like a, you know, and he just sent me a thing like, thank God I held on to my AMD. I told him, don't sell it. It's going to 700.
What do you think about uranium?
It's interesting.
Interesting. It's a little early for the game?
It's a when you say uranium, you know, it means a million things, by the way. It's not just uranium, but I'm just saying it's like,
yeah,
it's like a powerful word, but I think uranium is...
I think these small nuclear plants are going to be rolling off crazy. In about 3 years, like wildfire.
Nuclear's always been like, you know, it's a tough subject, a hot subject. Like, I'll give an example. I'm very sensitive to all these things because I'm in the market all the time. You know, Iran recently had a little drone attack mm-hmm. next to the only nuclear power plant in the Middle East. The UAE has it, aside from Israel.
Yeah.
And the headlines were immediate. There's been no leak, no radiation leak.
Yeah.
You never know. They wouldn't tell you if it was. But there were fires. The drones hit the nuclear power plant. You're talking about, you know what I mean? Those kind of issues. And these little drones are like, you know, we've got a $2 million missile to knock down a $150 drone.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy. And these drones swarm. And, you know, one or two hits on a nuclear power plant, you got a big problem.
Yeah.
In the Middle East, can you imagine?
And this is, I mean, this is the problem with centralization across the board, right?
Listen to you. Like, I get it.
You know, our government's doing these giant data centers, these centralized data centers, and it's the absolute wrong approach.
Well, Musk has got the new approach. He's building them in space.
He's
literally building data centers in space. I'm not joking. SpaceX is set aside like a...
And they're going IPO, right?
Yeah.
Like they sped that 10 up?
10 or 20 billion. Yeah, they're filing their comments today and tomorrow, final comments. Yeah. They're scheduled to be priced June 11th and go trade it June 12th. And they're only going to offer a sliver of stock, a small percent, a very teeny percent of the company. There's enormous demand. This thing's going to go fucking crazy. You know, some of the financial commentators are very funny. I never heard Jim Cramer. He was nervous. Like, by taking that approach, only offering a small amount of stock,
mm-hmm.
It's going to cause the... Because it's overwhelming demand, the stock's going to go crazy. It's going to go way, way, way up. Supply and demand, right?
Yeah.
And that's going to give the value of the company some crazy number. It's going to probably pass NVIDIA. It's going to be a $5 trillion company day one. And they lose money. You know what I mean? And they do revenue. It's a good company. They do, you know, billions in revenue, but not to support, not like NVIDIA.
Right.
You know, NVIDIA fucking do 70.
NVIDIA's now.
They'll do 70. NVIDIA's
solving problems that we have right now.
Well, they'll do 78 to 80 billion for the quarter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, but SpaceX is going to have the same value. It's on the come up. But, you know, the Cramer and the financial guys on TV are very funny. I can't believe they even brought this up. A lot of people, see, Wall Street is a transactional place. No mm-hmm. transactions, no one gets paid. So sometimes you have to create transactions. So everybody has NVIDIA. That's why it's not going higher. Because in order to buy other things, they have to sell NVIDIA to buy MU, Micron, sell NVIDIA to buy AMD, sell NVIDIA to buy, you know, Lumentum. So these brokers are moving money. They say, listen, we already made money in NVIDIA. I still love it. But, you know, I think that we have more opportunity here, which you might, because it's of the way things. And so people are going to start selling stocks in their portfolio, existing stocks, to buy SpaceX, Anthropic, OpenAI, Stripe. There's about a dozen of these IPOs that are coming.
Big IPOs hitting.
Huge.
That are going to change lives.
The biggest of all time.
Yeah. This is bigger than Cisco in 2000.
I love when people start talking about how they know things. No one knows anything. These are uncharted waters.
Yeah.
Which is my great opportunity because I really am an expert and I really get it. And I've lived through all these different things. I started 1983 and I achieved high levels from being a boardroom cold caller, you know? So you know what I'm saying? And a bar guy.
I love cold calling.
And a bar guy.
Calling's dead.
Well, I was a cold caller and I went to the bar right after.
Yeah.
I'm an expert in two areas.
I was an expert
drinking,
in both of those.
Drugging, and cold calling.
Yeah, 400 dials and then the bar.
That's exactly right. You know, anything that was repetitive, I had a great advantage because I'm an addict.
Yeah.
I actually liked it.
Yeah.
You know, I even didn't like rejection. It's really crazy. It's an odd thing. I'm wired different. So let's hear more about you. So now you're in business. You're at this primary net, you and your partner's engineer, sort of a little coup because they went into bankruptcy, right? The dot-com crash of 01.
Yeah,
that's where I made a lot of money, by the way.
Yeah, we came up, and I was young. My stepfather had just passed away. I didn't have a whole lot of cash, but I was coming out of a severance package. I was actually negative cash, right? Because I had all of my stock options that hadn't vested yet that were traded at $85 a share.
With that.
And it all went to zero.
I get it.
Over the year. So this was the time of, oh shit, we got to come out of some debt.
I get the whole thing.
Yeah, you know, get feet underneath us. So we took on, we had to raise some capital, right? We had to buy generators and servers and all that shit.
I can't imagine.
So we put together a group of about 25 guys and men and women. We didn't need a lot. We needed like 150 grand. To get what we needed, the starting cash. Okay. So we raised the money and started the company. Very shortly after, we got a couple of other companies together, right? And my friend Brian was doing software development, so we brought them in and did software development. The software, me and Steve, my mentor, unfortunately he's gone, we get an RFP one day come across our desk. And we show it to the other teammate and like, we're never going to win. This is AOL, right? AOL sends this RFP out. We're never going to win that. And I'm like, I think we can win it. Let's answer it at least. So we answered it. We said that we'll provision all your back office dial-ups for 10 cents a user per month, you know, blah, 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 all this stuff. This was for their Netscape deal.
I remember that.
Right. It was $30 a month for AOL.
Right.
And if you called to cancel, they'd convert you to Netscape for $9.99.
Something like that. Right. Right,
so
right.
We got the back office for Netscape because they couldn't do it on their old software.
Wow. Yeah.
And we got the deal. We went from, at the time, we were probably 25 employees to back up to 170.
Wow.
Pretty quickly. And I didn't know contracts that well back then.
I get it.
And we allowed a clause that said at any time, they can buy the rights to our software for $1 million cash. And
really?
Yeah. And we're chugging along. We get to about $170,000 a month in recurring billing.
Right.
And we get this bullshit check in the mail one day for $1 million. And we're like, what the hell is this? And they bought the rights. They bought out the contract for $1 million.
Who was it?
AOL.
Oh, AOL just bought you out.
They bought us out. And then so I had to fire 170 people.
For $1 million.
Because I put the stupid language in a contract that they could buy my software for our software. It was the whole team.
Right, right. At the time, you were thrilled for $1 million and you never saw
it. Well, no, because we're booking 100, you know, 100 grand a month.
Rob, just say when you put it in the contract, you were like, listen, maybe we'll get $1 million for one of those. You know?
Yeah, at that time, I was like, oh, $1 million. Well, you know, this would be great.
I get it. I understand.
But we ended up... Clearwire came aboard. We sold it to some other telecoms, right? And then ended up selling that software to Amdocs. So it's still running the Sprint back office today.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So you've had a lot of winners, so to speak, right?
We've hit some home runs, and then we got the coal industry. So Peabody Energy's in St. Louis.
Great company.
Great company. Courted them for a very long time. Got to build their data center, right?
Huge.
Built their data center. Got to learn about running ISDN lines all over the globe for, right? Because we got to weigh the coal at the coal mine as it comes out. We got to get that data back to the data center so that it can probably be gone out.
Very specific industry stuff.
Right. We had a court order from the Supreme Court that we could never delete data. Never delete data because of the tribal land stuff.
Oh, and, gosh.
Storage. So just, you know, all of these really,
memory.
really fun, fun challenges to overcome, right? So won the business, built the data center, ran it forever, and we put our feet up and said, we've got Peabody Coal. We've got Arch Coal. We built the data centers. We're the biggest, like, this is what we wanted, right?
Right.
We put our feet up on the desk and we said, we're the data center company for the coal industry. The coal industry is never going to change. Ugh. And 2016 rolls around and 17 and they all file bankruptcy. And those three companies all filed bankruptcy. And the three coal companies that I had all filed in like 8 months apart from each other, lost $6 million in
clean energy.
Like,
now they're back.
They're back, but not with me.
No, I get it.
They're restructured, right? So went to my team and we're like, what are we going to do? And I'm like, the bank's telling me we need to file bankruptcy and walk away from all this. And my biggest shareholder, Brian Matthews, he's like, we're not filing bankruptcy. So I'm going to do business after this. It's like, so you can do, you could choose what you want to do, Ken. You can try to figure it out, right?
I get it.
Or I'll fund the closing of everything, right? You close everything, make sure the customers land, and then we'll go out and do something else. I'm like, well, at the time, all that happened, and then Steve, my partner, passed away from throat cancer.
Gosh.
And probably the wrong decision, but I'm like, well, this is my baby. I'm gonna fight for it and try to keep it up, right? I'm gonna see what happens. And I'm gonna fight until I die, and I'm gonna die on the hill if I die. We just finished 3 months ago our final lawsuit from that, and from that, all that debacle in 2017.
Wow.
Yeah, on a large real estate deal that we had a long term lease on. It was a 46,000 square foot data center that we had a lease on for a long time. We fulfilled the lease, and there was some lawsuit about how we took care of the equipment in that afterwards.
Okay.
So
shit happens. It's business.
We got to fix some equipment that was left, some generators and shit. But then that'll be behind us, and I'll have a clear sailing, no lawsuits ahead of me.
Out of bankruptcy.
No bankruptcy. We never filed.
That's what I mean.
Never filed bankruptcy.
Wow.
You know, at that moment, I went to a $6 million a year deficit on that day when the gold companies fell.
I understand.
And, you know, not huge, but, you know, last year we did like a $400,000 EBITDA.
Wow. Okay.
So this year we'll do a little bit better. And next year, you know, with the AI stuff, I'm looking at ripping and rolling.
So you earn some money. You're earning some money as a company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My shareholders aren't that happy that last year that they had to pay their taxes for the first time in a little while, but.
I get it. I understand. They should have plenty of tax laws carry forward, but it's only $3,000 a year.
Yeah.
So you say you bought homes though, you have some.
Yeah, I got a couple houses.
You have assets, right?
Yeah. My wife and son live in one.
Okay.
And my mother lives in another. I'm kind of a nomad.
Okay.
My wife and I separated a little over a year ago, so.
You have an apartment somewhere?
I got an apartment in St. Louis, but I don't stay there very often.
You move around?
Yeah.
I know you were in a hotel last night.
It's an hotel. I just got back from Australia, overcoming parasites. Last Friday, I took the medicine to kill them all.
Really?
Yeah.
I did a few parasite cleanses, just so you know.
Yeah, it's rough, man.
I had Kim Rogers on. She's the worm queen, they call on Google.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, so she sent me all these different, you know, cleanses and this and that. I posted everything for her. And,
yeah,
you know, I have a good following. And she got a lot of business, et cetera. But she was on the show. But who knew?
It's wild.
Who knew? Every time you eat a bite into a piece of salmon sushi, you're getting 100 worms somewhere.
Well, I was in Costa Rica for a month, and then I was in Australia, the rainforest, for a month. So mine's a little.
And you don't look like you're a fussy eater. You're not like an organic, holistic type of guy, right?
Not really, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it. And then you mentioned you go to Vegas.
Yeah, I'm going to Vegas tomorrow. With the Quantum Expansion
Mikey
group.
Mikey C-Rock. Little shout out to Mikey. Thanks to Mikey, we got together and we got to know each other and hang out. And he runs a tremendous group, right?
It's amazing. You know, I'm working with Jerry on his new platform. We're going to start a social audio channel. Jerry's huge on the social audio side. So podcasting with distractions.
What does that mean?
So social audio is kind of like a podcast, but then your guests get to come in and talk in real life. So more like an old school radio produced show on the internet.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So it's like interactive.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about AI, right? And all that, and from the woo-woo all the way down to, you know, how do I make money? How do I get this thing to be a cash register for me?
I get it. So you've been involved in AI has been part of your life in an odd way, right? This whole the world of data. I mean, today data center, every clerk that works in a supermarket understands, you know, these data centers, all they talk about. You know, a very interesting statistic came out the other day is that 50% of all building, all construction going on in the United States of America right now, 50% is data centers.
Yeah.
What? I am like shocked.
Yeah. I have some theories there. And I'm not a stock guy or an analyst by far, but I saw this happen before. This happened in the CLEC world.
I remember the CLEX very much.
The government
made a lot of money in the CLEX. Then I got crushed at the end.
Yeah.
But I made $1 zillion. Yeah. Windstar Communications, WCII.
Yeah. Yep. So they overbuilt the CLEC data centers, right?
They did.
And we made our business by walking into defunct builds that never went live.
I get it. I get it.
Right. So I believe
just, like, checked in and said,
so right now I'm kind of holding back for the next, I think, 5 years.
They'll overbuild.
They're going to overbuild. No question. And I'm going to get to walk in without doing the capex of having one of these mega data centers and operate it, because that's what I've been doing for 25 years. I just
got to. Amazing. I told you, I got, you know, it's too much. When I get pitched a $50 billion deal. Ooh, me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to a lunch on Friday because an attorney friend of mine that's very successful, and he's an old friend of mine, done a lot of things together over the years. He wants me to come, and there's going to be like 2 billionaires at the meeting, and they're funding things. I mean, there's no – money is not the issue. There's a lot of zoning and coding and politicking and – you know, the locals, you know, who wants a data center in, down the block from them? You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're just not educated. And there's ways to do it that don't fuck up everything.
Right. But right now, one of the things, like in real estate, they ask when they're shopping for homes right now,
yeah,
any data centers around?
Yeah.
That's so crazy. That's how much this has permeated society right now.
Well, my algorithm has started giving me bulletproof vests as a data center operator.
You're going to need one. I got. Luckily, you're a pretty hardy guy. You know, you're a pretty hardy guy. Now, we talk about a lot of things now, but nowhere. I mean, at the very beginning of your story, you're basically born in a bar.
Yeah.
You basically grew up in a bar. So you're a drinker.
Yeah, I was a big drinker. My first time in AA was 13. In the 80s, they had this really cool thing called Tough Love, right?
I remember.
It was great for me, right? I didn't have a very good concept of yours and mine at that age. So if I needed something, if I was, you know, more than 4 or 5 miles from the house and I needed a car, I would take a car and borrow it and drive home.
Is that wrong?
The government thought so.
I get it.
Right? They taught me all my lessons. Okay. They put me in little boxes to teach me lessons, and so they put me in all these little classes and all that stuff.
Did you do some juvenile time?
All in total juvenile, in and out, probably 120, 200 days in somewhere in there.
The normal sentence is like 21 days. So
yeah. I did that a couple times.
You've had a few run-ins with police. So you've been drinking since you're young.
Since the age of 2, right? Hey, Kenny, go get me a beer. Sure. Can I open it? Yep. Bam. You know, so I was 2 or 3 beers deep, you know, by then. And even, you know, the first time I missed a day of school was second grade because I was too drunk to go.
That's a new one for the teacher.
Yeah.
That's you don't hear that every day.
Yeah.
Even in my world, that's you're pretty accelerated in that.
I mean, we lived in a party world, right? My stepdad was a baker. A union baker, good old boy, yep. You know, third shift, got done with, you know, did his hard week, poured concrete on the weekends and drank.
And drank when he could, when he and wasn't working. He
was wasn't
drinking.
Working. The garage door was open. The neighborhood was out. There was a little bonfire out front and the kids were goofing off, riding their bikes and doing all that stuff.
I love it. And somewhere along the line, drugs or just alcohol?
You know, I like drugs. You know, what our society calls drugs.
Okay. Weed.
I'm a huge advocate for cannabis.
Okay.
Weed. I love mushrooms.
Okay.
You know, but I think they can be done in a in a healthy way.
Right. Well, that's the new thing right now. I mean, yeah. Trump has been approving all kinds of
It's great.
Very like, cool stuff.
Say what you will about politics, but some of these things are getting knocked down. And the woo of the world, give a shout out to my buddy Lawrence, who's working on the new woo.
Let's do movie. It.
You know, the woo of the world is getting exposed, and AI is helping that.
Lawrence from Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Lawrence.
With IICT.
I know Lawrence.
Yeah.
We've been in touch.
Yeah, great guy.
Great guy.
Amazing, and he's working on the new woo.
Yep.
And it's amazing how that intersects. That's who I was in Australia with for the last time.
I love it. The Lollies have been here. You know Anthony Lolly and Teresa Lolly?
Yeah.
So the Lollies live in Boca, and I had them both in the studio.
Yeah.
We had like a 3-hour podcast. It was wonderful.
It's amazing.
They're wild people. So mushrooms, I mean, you know, I had a wild guy, Zappy Zappelin. He's the...
Yeah.
You know Zappy?
I don't know him, but I've seen some of his stuff.
He's also, he's like in Idaho, but he's also here in Palm Beach. But he, Michael Zappy Zappelin, he's a concierge. He's a psychedelic concierge to the stars.
Yeah.
He's made movies and he's won awards for taking people into like the jungle. A famous actress, she's in all the movies with the cars.
Oh, Fast and Furious.
Fast and Furious girl. He took her into the wilds, the Amazon, and they did mushrooms and all these different things. And I forget some of the terms, but you have me so off balance right now because you are a dichotomy. You know, you're a cerebral guy in terms of, like you started on the keyboard.
Yeah.
Dyslexic. Mm-hmm. Class for slow learners. And yet you're incredibly intelligent and incredibly learned and actually have accomplished. You're now what I would say is somebody that's been accomplished in business.
Yes.
When you make and lose and you learn along the way, it's just a matter of time till you apply all those lessons and you become very successful. Yes. That's just been my take. I'm very aware about what one of the things that I is good about me is I'm aware. I'm very socially aware, business aware, all these different things. And I'm also just living my life. I've made it, lost it twice, big.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes. You know what I mean? It's taken away from me.
You lost the most
couple hundred million dollars
that we have.
And freedom.
Fuck the money.
And freedom. Yep.
But you lost your time, brother, on this planet.
Lock me up. I get it. It's crazy stuff.
That's the hard part.
But you also, somewhere along the way, became a boxer. A boxing coach. You own a big
boxing coach. I've got a Golden Gloves in St.
Louis.
Tell
us about this.
Yeah. So I was 39. I was really sick.
Tell us about the
company's kicking my ass, right? Like just I'm on debt negotiation calls, trying to negotiate. I'm fighting with my back on the floor.
And you're drinking
every single day.
Right.
And I'm just drinking. I've got an autistic son. That's challenging. I've got an amazing artist daughter who's amazing in every single way, but still brings her own challenges. And alcohol and drug use was always rewarded. I was rewarded by the amount that I could drink and do because
right. People cheering you on.
And I would have my buddies from Germany come over and they're buying big data center stuff and doing big data center builds. And I could take them out to the bars longer and later than everybody else, right? I could get them to the gentlemen's bars and do all that stuff. And I could find anything that everybody wanted. And I could do all that and still be at the data center the next morning, right? Because I've got this crazy brain that just doesn't require the normal 8 hours of sleep that everybody else needs. Which there's some really cool science behind that too.
But
the liver does, right? Yeah. So, you know, I was back up to like 310 pounds.
Too much.
Not feeling good.
That's all I am.
I'm 5'10 and a half now.
Okay. What do you weigh
I
right
broke
now?
My back a couple once, so I give myself that half an inch.
I can't even imagine.
I'm 240.
You're a big kid. If anyone that would see you would say you're a big kid.
Yeah. So I had to quit drink. I went to the hospital. Funny enough, the story goes, I was at the data center in my heat mitigation room. It's like a 10,000 square foot hot room that we just ducked hot air from the servers into this room and let it kind of dissipate outside.
Servers have to be cooled.
Right. So it's like 3 a.m. I call in the data center and I walk out into this heat mitigation room and I pass out. Don't know what's going on. Next thing I know, I'm in the hospital and they're testing me. My heart rate's going through the roof. Like, don't know what's going on. Thought I was dying. Thought I had a heart attack, right?
It's like organ failure.
Yeah. So the doc's like, you know, keeps asking me these questions. And one question he asked me, he's like, are you still drinking? I'm like, yeah. Well, I had strep throat for a couple days before that. So I hadn't drank in two or three days. And they're doing all the tests. And he comes in, he goes, when was the last time you drank? I'm like, well, it was like 2 or 3 days ago. And I was in withdrawal.
Wow.
It's so, 2 days. Yeah.
I
and so they pulled a liver panel, all that stuff. My liver counts are in the 900s. 1,000 is non-recoverable.
Right.
So he's like, what do you want to do? Do you want to quit or die? You can go home and die today. You'll be dead in 2 years if you're doing what you're doing. Because you're going to be in cirrhosis in no time.
No way to come out of that.
Right. And or we can quit. So I was like, well, let's quit. 3 years goes by, no alcohol.
But now hold on, let me just touch on a subject people don't know. You can't just go cold turkey without. You have to be medically withdrawn, because withdrawal from alcohol and benzodiazepines is fatal at the level you're drinking 100%.
Well, they gave me a benzo addiction to replace my alcohol addiction.
Okay, but I get that.
And then I had to withdraw from that too, which was rough.
I withdrew from benzos.
Yeah.
21 day detox.
Yeah, it's rough.
21 days, bro.
Yeah. All that goes, and the doc says there's no signs of liver disease.
Wow.
After 4 years, no drinking, exercise, clean eating, everything. And I go, oh, so I can have a beer at dinner again.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, no, I don't think so. If you can do one or two,
yeah, big if.
At dinner, then yeah, you don't have it. Then you can do that. But you know, you've gone through this. Let's not do it again. Well, one or two turns into two or six, and then two or six turns into a 20 pack and a fifth. Right. And,
a fifth of what? What's your,
At that time it was a fifth or two of Crown a night. I've gone through my phases of Crown, Jaeger, you know, whatever it was 151 for a while when I was young. So, and then I was on my way home from Podfest probably 4 years ago, and I partied pretty hard at Podfest, and I'm driving home and I get pulled over in Georgia doing 96.
Oh gosh.
And he pulls me over and all this rigmarole, and it ends up I had more cannabis in my car than I realized, and they do not like that at all in Georgia. So I got to spend a little time in Taylor County. And as I was leaving Taylor County, I stopped and got 240 ounces on my walk to
get, so you were drinking again, drinking and smoking weed.
Yeah. And, I took a drink and I thought to myself, like my entire life flashed before my, before everything at that moment. Like, you know, I don't have a belt. Because I lost my belt somewhere in this whole rigmarole. My pants are falling down. I'm walking down the side of the street. I'm almost fucking 50 years old. I'm like, this cannot be my fucking life, man. Like, I'm getting out of jail. I'm getting out of holding at fucking this age. This is horrible. And I thought about, and I went back to the boxing coaching, right? So during that time, I found boxing to help me recover. Back in the beginning.
I also found boxing.
Right. So I'm boxing and the school that I was at was run like shit. So I had to buy it. And I told the owner, I'm like, look, what are you going to do? He's like, probably going to shut it down. I'm like, well, you need to sell it to me, because if I don't have this boxing gym, I'm going to die.
Right.
I need this.
I mean, it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. So I taught all these kids how to box, and I went through all these different flow coaching and all this stuff. Cause now I've got these goober kids coming to me, asking me to teach them how to do something.
Right.
Because I've done golden gloves and all this other stuff. Through all of that, I realized what I was doing for them when I was coaching them was changing their identity, how they felt about themselves. And when that clicked, I'm like, oh, I can't be an alcoholic for the rest of my life. As long as I say I'm an alcoholic, I'll be an alcoholic. I need to become a sober man.
Right.
And I need a coach to do that. I don't need a program. I don't need any of that shit. So I developed the Reclaim Sobriety Program and coached myself through the art of being sober and happy, right? Because you got all these dry drunks and shit. And what I Correct. Learned is post-acute withdrawal syndrome, pause, is really challenging. There's not a lot of help for it. And at that moment, those moments, I think, where men and women in addiction need the most help.
Have you written a book in your life?
Yeah, Reclaim Sobriety.
Wrote a book called Reclaim Sobriety.
Yes, my new book is coming out in August of this month. It's available right now, called Loading Identity.
Loading Identity.
Loading Identity, the art of loading an identity to execute at a very high level in a specific domain, how to become superhuman with AI. So I take a whole bunch of all my coaching. I believe right now I'm a person on this planet that has significant disadvantages. You wouldn't know it by looking at me because I've used a ton of tools. Today, I don't care where you're at. You have the tools available to you right. to become superhuman in whatever you want to do. The tools are here for you to use today, just knowing how to use them.
Not tomorrow, today.
Today. They're here right now. They've right. been here for 2-3 years. People just don't know how to use them. They're scared.
If you really want to do it, it's available to you. I tell you, my crew, my team, is using AI for everything.
Yeah.
To edit this podcast, we use AI. To clean up the audio, to clean up the video. Editing, we cut clips. AI tells us the percentage of likelihood this clip will go viral over yeah. this clip. I mean, literally, it's so unbelievable.
Yeah.
These notes.
Built with AI?
AI.
With the help of AI.
With the help of AI.
AI didn't go do it for you. You didn't say, hey, AI, go do my job for me.
No.
You had your influence and you used AI as a partner.
Right. You have to put in input. It's like garbage in, garbage out, yes. right? You have to put in, my team has built like a little AI version of me.
Yeah.
Literally. And I wrote a book. AI wrote the book, but it's my words. It's my, yeah. and it literally is me. They programmed every single piece of audio and video.
AI me's running all over the world.
I can't even imagine. That's a scary thought.
Doing all kinds of stuff. Like, you know, I stop using AI as a toy and start using it as like an employee, right? So yep. if you have all the mundane shit, you can have AI do for you.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And it's easier to do today than it's ever been. The dot-com era democratized business in a way that we've never seen on our planet. And AI is going to 100x that.
I get that.
And if you don't come on board today, I'm really afraid for what happens to the people that don't adopt.
Well, I would say, you know, there's a majority of people that won't. You know, I did a piece recently, you know, if you're afraid of AI costing you your job, it already did.
Yes. That fear is what's going to get you
lost. It already did.
Because you won't adopt it.
You already lost.
Yeah.
If you're afraid, if you're not acting ahead of that, you already lost it. You don't realize it.
And it's so beautiful. What I don't understand is that people they don't want to do their damn jobs anyway.
Right.
You don't want to do the job anyway. Let the AI do it and be the babysitter for it. At least for the next 10 years, humanity's not going to trust AI. Not to be fully autonomous. No. And it's an infant.
Right. It's an infant. In 2 years, we'll have robots doing everything.
I should have my robot this year.
But I mean, I'm talking about Musk with Optimus.
Yeah.
It's going to be a household thing. $6,000 retail.
Yeah. I got an X1 for $500 a month.
Really?
And it takes out the trash in the building and
does it? All that.
Yeah.
Wow. Never ask you for a raise.
Never ask for a raise.
Never calls in sick.
Charge.
Never calls in sick.
Never calls in sick.
Never hungover.
Yeah. Not emotional.
Never had to go to his grandmother's funeral.
Think about retraining an employee without emotion.
I get it. It's crazy. It doesn't exist. It's huge. It's huge. I mean, so you are really, so you have a robot already.
I have several robots. Yeah.
So you have data.
We've got 6 acre lot, and we have a robot cutting our grass, trimming our weeds.
Wow.
Plowing our lot. Yeah. If I mean, so there's something in business called a SMAC. I think Southwest Airlines popularized it. Systematic, methodical, and consistent rule set.
Wow.
Right. And it's something you go through because you should be consistent because you want to change it a lot. And when we developed the Smack for River City Internet Group, which is the holding company for all of my jazz.
Okay. I love that.
When we came up with the Smack for that, one of the rules that I made 20 years ago, if it can be automated, it will.
I love that too.
If it can be automated, it will be automated.
100%.
Right? So Ford in Japan taught us how to Kanban, how to do assembly lines, that we know work gets lost from one station to the next. So put as much work as one station as possible. We've got all of this great knowledge, and now we have this intelligence that we can program to go off into the world and do all kinds of cool stuff for us.
It's crazy. You know, I took five guys to Japan. I was thinking of you when you were telling the story about not going to Japan with the band, right? It was my friend's kid that worked for me. It was his sort of bachelor party, right? But all the other guys are married, so we did it on the other side of the world. I hope you're not listening. And I bought a medical technology business, and it was headquartered. The original technology came out of Japan, out of the biggest pneumatics company, which is pressurized air, in the world. $10 billion a year company, makes $2 billion, trades on the stock exchange, pays a dividend, just a solid, one of these solid, unexciting, but yeah. It's in everything, every car, every engine, all that kind of stuff. So I went and I took my five guys over to meet with this $10 billion company. And they held me in a very high esteem. I was with the, chairman. There's all kinds of customs and stuff. And it was really an amazing experience. But the last day they took us to a floor. It was a factory. And they wanted to show us something. Because we had just been in talks and all that. You don't talk business at first for like the first 2 days. It's the whole thing. You know what I mean? And they had a whole factory of robots, building robots. Mm-hmm. It was robots building robots. And they were talking about how they had just got an order for $1 billion. This is 20 years ago to recreate this factory floor of robots building robots 20 years ago. And I can tell you the floor, literally, in the factory was cleaner than my kitchen table, my counters. Not a speck of dust.
Humanity doesn't understand exponential scale. And
this is 20 years ago.
And we're going to hit it really soon.
We're off to the races. Listen, he's building data centers in space. Yeah. And Musk has made an argument for it, and it's not even a contest. You don't have to worry about heat. Where's the heat going this time? A million things, if you think about it. You don't have to worry about, zoning. once it's up there, it's in orbit. It just, adhesive.
But I don't know that we're going to need – I just don't know that the need's there. Because we're going to be able to infer data in every car driving around. Every device on planet Earth is going to be able to inference data.
It's already doing that, really.
It's already doing it, right? We're going to have these mega computers sitting in our driveways.
Well, I think they're just 3,000-pound robots. That's what I think.
That's it.
That's really what they are today. The Tesla's not a car. It's a robot.
But when it's sitting –
gathering data.
The ownership of that asset is going to be so strange because it's a data center on wheels, right? And if you 100%. Grid them together, the grid technology is going to – the routing technology is going to be huge.
You're embedded in this whole thing. So you have, this wonderful ability to visualize this stuff. For me, I look at it all as in terms of investment opportunity.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so, when they started talking about the data that's being produced in these data centers, I realized that where are we going to store all this data? You need memory chips.
Yeah.
So I went and bought Micron and did some homework, AMD, what I'm saying? And those are my number one. I recommended them today.
Yeah.
When we first found Micron at 180, AMD, it was a teenager. It was under 20.
And Musk is going to be coming out with his new chip manufacturing line.
Forget about it. That's going to be nuts.
It's going to be
absolutely bananas crazy. And he's going to have, they're going to raise him 75 to 80 billion for a small sliver of SpaceX. You hear me? 75 to 80 billion at a market cap of $1,750,000,000. By the way, this is going to happen in 3 weeks. And Elon Musk is going to be sitting with all that cash, all that capital. He'll be the first trillionaire. And, you know, he is making shit happen. It's on another level.
His line about, have you seen the airport? Because he wants a rocket going out of every hour.
I understand. He has over 200 satellites orbiting there. Yeah. I mean, it's really crazy. Starlink is phenomenal. But, you know, again, I did a very interesting podcast about Elon Musk versus Jensen Huang. Like, the NVIDIA CEO is second smartest guy in the world. That's how I posit things. People say, where do you get all this information? I go, just listen to these fucking guys.
The information's available to you on YouTube for free now.
Sort of. You have to be able to disseminate it, though. You know what I mean? I have an ability. I can listen to, like, 2 hours of financial news, and what I hear is very different than what you hear. Because that's my game.
Absolutely, yeah.
I glean, you know, what's really happening or not happening. You know?
I'm looking for levers to pull, like things I can go build, and you're looking to trade stuff.
I'm looking at what they're selling.
Yeah.
And what they're selling, why,
and how. I have to occupy my brain on what can I go build.
Right. Well, that's really, you know, you're way ahead of me. I just never wanted to work for a living. I don't want to build stuff. I just wanted to, like, figure out, you know, what's got the most money. I just was interested in money so I could go drink and drug.
Yeah.
I was very simplistic.
I was just interested in the drink and drug. I didn't care how I got there.
I get it. It's very expensive to be a real drug addict today. I mean, you know, I wanted to be a big player in Manhattan. I was doing cocaine and stuff like that. It was a fortune of money, bro.
My wife asked me once, she goes, you know, you take $300 a day out of the ATM. What's that for? I'm like, well, that's how much I drink a day.
I know, it's
like crazy. That's the minimum.
That's crazy.
Right?
You really think about it.
Yeah.
What we've done. So you are literally an AI guy.
I'm a multifaceted man, but yeah, I'd lean heavy into AI. Early adopter, right? I'm a 0.01 adopter on ChatGPT.
You're dyslexic.
Very dyslexic.
You're autistic.
Autistic, yes. Diagnosed autistic.
You're a drunk.
Was a drunk.
You're an addict.
Yes.
You're a beast of a man. You're my kind of guy, bro.
You too, Ross.
Is there anything we haven't covered that you want to share with everybody today?
You know, I just...
Tell us what's on your plate today.
What's on my plate today? I'm refinancing the data center today to get the money to pay for the lawsuit that I just lost.
I love it.
And pull all that around. You know, today, if you're sharing your data, you're sharing your thoughts, and this is my best scary story that I have for sharing your thoughts with something with a publicly traded or a company that you don't know who it is, right? You don't know their privacy policy. You don't know any of those things. Grandma buys a digital diary for her granddaughter that's 7 years old, hands it to her, and she shares all her thoughts with this digital diary for the next 20 years of her life. And now she run for Congress in 20 years or any of those things. You know, a lot of these firms or companies have the policy that any law enforcement request, they hand over the data.
I get it.
That means if I'm running for local government, the local DA can just ask me for all your emails. And they would give it to them.
Since you're 7 years old.
Since you're 7 years old.
I understand.
And now this woman's going to be running for Congress or something, right? And I just don't think the world understands that. So, you know, if I create services and classes on how to keep your data safe and sovereign. And that's really what's important to me. I've been on the wrong side of all of those things, right? We live in a world that cannabis use has been demonized for years, and oh shit, we find out, oh, it's really this wonderful plant that does all these amazing things for people. But, you know, I've spent lots of time in a box because of that plant. And I think that people need the right to have open places to have those conversations with artificial intelligence without the fear of being criticized, sold.
To the government, to journalists, and to
anybody.
Anybody.
These are your thoughts.
Anybody that has any money, right?
When you're talking with an AI about a business plan at 3 a.m, you sure as hell don't want Sam Altman's eyes on that damn thing or Elon Musk's. God love them.
Right.
I love those men for what they're doing.
So that's really something that you're bringing to the world today. I love what you said, sovereign.
Sovereign data, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, that's what it's got to be about. And it's what will – we're in a race for gray on the other side of the fence, man. Everything's the same. This is a race to the middle. I don't want to be in that race to the middle. I want to do something different, right? So
I love that.
I want to help people that don't know that they can or they want to go. That's who I really want to help. And today, man, there's just no barriers. There's no barrier to entry. In almost any industry.
I get it. There really isn't. I want to say that to you. And that's one of my secrets. I don't want to even share too much about that because, you know, I don't need to be a licensed stockbroker to do what I want to do. You understand? It's so crazy.
Yeah.
It used to be you had to go through all this crap, the regulation. You know, if you're a licensed stockbroker today, you're not even allowed to have social media.
Oh, really?
Well, I have social media. I don't need a license or regulation.
Right, because you're not trading on their behalf.
Well, I can do what I want to do in a certain way.
Yeah.
There's a lot of – it's a race to the middle. It's really
And I'm not saying that you should use any AI as your total legal consultant. Mm. But you can have – in-depth conversations about loopholes and how to get through and those kinds of things before you ever go to your attorney.
Of course.
Right. Like
I get that. Yes. And I don't do that, but I have partners that do that. They call me and say, you know, everybody keep an eye on me. I'm like a rainmaker. So I attract a posse because, you know,
yeah,
I get a kick off, you know, real money.
It's pretty wild. It's a fun time to be alive. Scary. I hate that we're going to end up in this K economy for the non-adopters.
It's going to be rough for a lot of people.
All transitions are bumpy.
Yeah, all.
And this is a big transition in a lot of industries all at the same time, which means for me, it's huge opportunities
huge across opportunity. The board. For you,
And I get to do the kind of work that I want to do in the wheelhouse. Places that I want to be.
The quantum is coming right behind that. That's, you know, again.
Ross, I can right now today for $6,000, I can rent a satellite in low Earth orbit for an hour. And for $4,000 an hour, I can rent quantum compute through AWS. And I can throw the quantum OS on top of that. I can have a global view for $10,000 an hour and quantum compute right now today. Right. I can have that today.
Pretty soon it'll be 10 cents from your house.
And
eventually.
Yeah.
That's
well, eventually we're just going to be able to create, right?
Right.
You know, CERN has shown us some things that are just mind-boggling.
Mind-boggling. I get it. All right, let's just wind up. I want to ask you one question I love to ask.
Okay.
You know, Ken Cox, it's 2026, May. I know it's hard to believe for me. Where are you going to be Memorial Day weekend, 2031? Tell us about you, your life, and all that. 2031.
I hope to be spending my time between the United States and Costa Rica. I'm working with some friends for – I'm not going to talk about what we're going to be doing, but for me to be spending more time in Costa Rica, I love it down there, the beaches and the sunsets. I've never been closer to God than I have
– I love that.
– there. You know, just helping companies navigate through we're not going to be done in 5 years.
No.
Right. With this is AI adoption is going to be happening for the next 30 to 50 years until we're completely migrating. And it could happen faster. But humanity and their marriage to their sunk costs is a hard one to walk away from. So humans will keep us in play for a very, very long time.
It's going to be fun, boy.
Yeah. It's going to be a blast. And I get to work on projects. There's all kinds of broken stuff, right? There's shitty software that's been written for 50 years that all needs to be fixed, right? And I happen to know some nasty pieces of software that tracks stuff like steel across our ocean that is written in old COBOL language that's lost the original source code that needs to be rewritten from scratch. So, and AI can do that stuff today in a way that we couldn't do.
It's going to be. I feel like 5 years from today, it's going to be unimaginable, but I do picture you in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
Closer to God.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more tan, a little more white in the beard.
Yeah, a couple pounds off, hopefully.
Hopefully. Ken, it was so great having you here today. I really appreciate it.
Ross, thank you for your time today. I appreciate you.
Great podcast.